I'm Julia Sherbakov, and this is Impact Journey. Conversations with hidden heroes making big societal change.
Beauty is such a universal concept. You will be hard-pressed to find anybody who does not want to live a beautiful life. And it points to the fact that if we want to resolve business issues or societal challenges, at the end of the day, it's all about life. And what we are trying to do with the House of Beautiful Business is to actually put the notion of a beautiful life at the very core of the mainstream business conversation.
Today, I am happy to welcome Tim Lebrecht about his impact. Tim is the co-founder and co-CEO of the House of Beautiful Business, a global think tank and community with the mission to make humans more human and business more beautiful. Before that, he was a marketing executive at global design firms, has several popular TED Talks, and wrote the book, The Business Romantic. About his journey and why I was excited to talk to Tim on how he's creating this unexpected union of business and beauty. When I joined virtually the House of Beautiful Business latest event, The Great Wave, I loved seeing the unexpected mix of music, art, science, activism, things that don't normally go with business. And I saw that this intersection is needed on so many levels. That's how we get new ideas. That's how we shake people out of the normal ways of thinking. And especially this year, that's how we get to be more human. So please enjoy this conversation with Tim Lebrecht.
Where I often start with is your influences to see what got you to this point, because here you are co-founding and running the House of Beautiful Business. But I'd love to hear where beauty and romance entered your life, because I saw that you at one point started in music and journalism, but I wonder if it goes even further. Where does that start with you?
Well, first of all, really great to be on the podcast. And I guess I always wanted to be an artist. My grandfather was a filmmaker actually in Berlin, and I never met him because he died before I was born, but I always heard about his work and he made documentary films. So there's definitely this artistic streak in my life that I was always trying to pursue. And when I was 12 or 14, I read a lot. I was a total like bookworm and deep into movies as well and art house, cinema. So I remember a few books that really made a huge impression on me. I was very much into French art house. And I remember reading Letters by François Truffaut, you know, who directed Jules and Jim. And I loved just immersing myself into the lives of artists like him. And I always wanted to live a beautiful life with a lot of art. And I was always very interested in the tension between different forces, tragic, you know, comedy and the, sort of the theatrical aspects of life. And I was always very interested in experiences. So I wanted to become a filmmaker when I was younger. That's probably the influence of my late grandfather. And then I ended up in marketing. Yeah, as it happened.
And how did that happen?
But I mean, not too shabby. Yeah, some detours. Interestingly enough, now when I wrote the book, The Business Romantic, I was trying to bring these two tracks together, sort of the artistic, creative, imaginative side, and then the business side. And with the House of Beautiful Business, the global think tank and community that I co-founded a few years ago, that's essentially also the pursuit that, you know, way it's been a homecoming to what I was really interested in when I was 12, 14. I think that's true for many people.
And so I'd love to hear a bit more about that transition into marketing, because it's almost like you were exploring what beauty, what creativity experiences can mean, but in a quote unquote traditional context. So I'm curious how you got into that, what you learned from that, that then brought you back to create the House of Beautiful Business.
Yeah, I guess I ended up in business for pragmatic reasons. Because I was not so confident in my ability to earn a living as an artist, although I would have loved to do so. And I played in a band when I was 20, 21, we released two albums, but then we didn't sell enough records. The tour fell through. One of the band members left the band, you know, big break.
And, oh, the drama.
A lot of drama. And I had to reset and go back to university. You know, I grew up in Southern Germany, so a somewhat conservative part of the country, very honest, hardworking, very frugal in a way. And I guess I sort of grew grew up with this notion of like, I have to do something legitimate and bring my creativity to a field that is widely accepted and safe. So I think then inevitably I ended up in business, and marketing seemed like the most promising and interesting avenue for the skills that I was able to hone. And I was very lucky. I studied in the US. I worked for Frog Design, one of the leading design and innovation consultancies at the time, probably still. I had a lot of license to play and a lot of freedom to help build the brand and learn and get in touch with the tech community in Silicon Valley for 14 years, really. And I learned a lot. You know, first you're sort of awestruck and you try to play the game by the rules and you try to fit in. But after a while, especially if you come from Europe, you realize that maybe is not your home and that there is a different set of values, and you become more aware of the fault lines in the system there that seems at first sight so appealing and persuasive. And I think I just grew confident in my own voice much more so than I was when I started my career. Particularly when I turned 40, I was working with a coach, Priya Parker, who wrote the book, The Art of Gathering. She's a friend of mine. And that was actually the first time when I was really like reflecting on things such as purpose and what I wanted to do with my life and where I wanted to have an impact really and what my talent really was and my superpowers. That was actually very, very helpful.
And what is your superpower? What did you discover?
I actually wrote a mission statement or a purpose statement for myself, which is very helpful. What I like doing and where I believe I can actually have an impact is I love curation. So I love curating people. I love connecting people. I love to see things in the in-between spaces. So I like to bring together what does not belong together. And I like to imagine. I like to create spaces for creativity and imagination and invite others into these spaces and then be a host and an observer at the same time.
That fits so well into what the House of Beautiful Business does in terms of curation and creating spaces. Can you just say a few words about how it was born and what the goal of it was?
It was born as a secret society, really, because I was writing about secret societies being these romantic vehicles in my book, The Business Romantic. And in the last line of the book, I was tongue-in-cheek. I was inviting the reader to apply for the Business Romantic Society and sent me an email. It was meant as a joke, but some people did write. And I was kind of moved by it and felt responsible to then also put on some events and create a community around that interest. So together with my co-founder, Till, whom I had worked with for several years at Frog Design, we created the first House of Beautiful Business. We took over a guild house in the Barrio Gótico in the old town of Barcelona and invited friends, like 100 friends. It was free. It was very much an experiment, but we realized that it struck a chord and that people wanted to have a more intimate and more emotionally gripping experience to connect in business and not just exchange business cards, you know, bring the arts and the humanities into this conversation, but also a little bit outside of the realm of purpose or social impact, which can also very quickly become somewhat technocratic and very rational. And I always felt like it also needs to be romantic. It cannot just be driven by rational motives. And that's the space that we were trying to create with the house. And it's literally a space that was a physical space. And then now it's become more of a metaphorical space as well, because the house has grown into a hybrid community with local events and content and podcasts and thought leadership. So it's a global, virtual, and partly in-person community around that cause. How can we make business more beautiful and humans more human? That's a mission.
That's actually what got me onto the House of Beautiful Business. In one of the impact or sustainability spaces that I'm in, heard someone mention it. I was like, beautiful business, what is it? And yet what I realized, something that's really special, is that I think there's a broad sense that we need to rethink how we do things, and certainly in business, but in other parts of society, and certainly this year. Yet there's so many doors you can go into in order to reimagine the future of our society, but the future of business. And I've seen people walk through the door of, for example, innovation, some because of a crisis, some because of sustainability, for example, or maybe there's something negative that happened to them and they need to protect their reputation. But it's so interesting because this was the first time that I had seen that door or be beauty and humanizing. So I'm very curious, with this door of beauty, who does it appeal to? Like, how does it engage people and how does it work differently than maybe some of those other doors would, to really rethink how people run their business and think about their role?
Beauty is such a universal concept. I mean, you will be hard pressed to find anybody who does not want to live a beautiful life. So it strikes a chord with everybody. And it points to the fact that if we want to resolve business issues or societal challenges, whether the door is in innovation or impact or sustainability, at the end of the day, it's all about life. We need to learn about life. We need to understand life. And beauty beauty is, if you will, the lure, right? The goal is a more beautiful life. That's the kind of space that we want to create. And that's also why we have sessions where we juxtapose a conversation about melancholy with a conversation about blockchain. Exactly those connections that are so interesting. I mean, so often we remove emotions and this quest for a beautiful life or the desire for a deeper attunement with ourselves and with nature, right? So we do meditation, mindfulness exercises, extracurricular activities. They're still very helpful, obviously, but we remove it from the very core. And what we are trying to do with the House of Beautiful Business is to actually put the notion of a beautiful life at the very core of the mainstream business conversation. And we have a very eclectic community. So it includes coaches and freelancers and artists, scientists, CEOs, interns, but also corporate middle managers. And we often see with managers coming from corporates that they come with crossed arms, skeptical, somewhat intrigued by the promise, and then basically leaving the house, ideally very transformed and very moved, telling us without even being able to articulate like a clear benefit or a very specific business outcome, that they are very, very encouraged by the mere fact that we exist, where I can bring all my desires, where I can have a very different conversation and still be in a business environment. Just the fact that there is such a desire for entering that space, even without really pinpointing the exact benefits.
It's almost like there's this deep desire in people for this type of space, for this type of connection that they didn't even know they had. And I think that's something so interesting that the House of Beautiful Business does, this unexpected mixing where there's just enough of a bridge to business, then it brings in these topics that you'd never have at a normal conference. You wouldn't necessarily have, you know, an artist or a scientist or a philosopher, you know, there's just enough of the unexpected that it almost shakes you out of your normal ways of thinking. And I'm curious, some of these corporate managers that come in and come out changed, what changes in them? And what do you think they do differently as a result?
They often look at their business differently and their legacy. So I remember that one CEO from a design firm who had been attending the house for a couple of years. Initially, he came with a very specific agenda, basically measuring the value of the event by the number of leads that he would create. And then I think in the second year, he left and told us afterwards, he said, you know, I didn't generate any leads or some, but that wasn't the point. The point was that I went back and I completely redesigned my whole company and my life. In their case, they actually went from a fairly traditional design innovation firm and now completely basically reoriented themselves and aligned everything that they're doing with the circular economy to become a completely circular business and a B Corp. You know, I don't want to take too much credit for it. This is completely their own vision and agenda. But even if we just provided the spark or gave him the license to explore or just get in touch with the side of himself that encouraged him to think along those lines, I think that is helpful.
I love how you describe what your role in it is as providing that spark. You know, you're not coming to this event to necessarily learn how to step by step change your business or become a more purposeful business, but the role is really with a step well before that. It really helps me see how we each have a role to play in transforming the world into the future that we want it to be. Some are leading by example, others are really deep in the weeds. And there's this role of providing that spark of inspiration that gets people to think differently that you can't even really measure. That's hard. I imagine that it's the beauty and the challenge of the work that you do.
Absolutely. It comes with the territory. Beauty is elusive. The Portuguese writer, we often quote Fernando Pessoa, said beauty is what does not exist. But in general, I think it's an idea and it's an idea worth pursuing.
And it leads me into this question that I often struggle with, especially in my work and now strategy and operations for impact, and more recently moving into making people dream and connecting not just rationally, but emotionally to it. I challenge myself on this, really differentiating between the talk and the action, because often what results is beautiful speeches or a beautiful marketing campaign, and that's it. You know, so I'm really curious in the work that you do and following the people in this community, how do you differentiate between talk and substance?
I wouldn't even between talk and substance. I think talk's very substantive. I wrote in a piece in defense of ideas. Other piece actually in sort of in defense of words, why words matter and are very, very important. And we have this tendency sometimes to dismiss talk. I believe if we create a culture in which we measure the value of ideas only by their actual impact on people's lives, then we will not have any ideas anymore. A beautiful speech can really change your life. I mean, that's what books do, but we tend to depreciate them because we believe they're not tangible or they don't measurably impact our lives. And in fact, they probably do in many ways that will be forever mysterious. But at the same time, I have an enormous amount of appreciation for people who actually do stuff in a business environment. And we do as part of our business, we also do consulting, and it's very important for us. It's not always fun. It's not always beautiful or romantic. It also requires actually staying involved for a time when things get really rough. But it's good because it grounds us. We definitely err on the side of being more on the idea side, and we really want to challenge us to become very specific and very concrete. But specific does not have to mean specific actions. Specific just means not sort of escaping to abstractions, being very specific, even in the words that you choose or the ideas that you articulate, I think makes a difference.
I like how you're saying that there's different phases of that work, and part of it is the idea and part of it is expressing that idea well. But I think where your role is and where I see my role often, it's bridging that idea to sometimes to action, but like you said, sometimes to just specificity. And yet there is something about language and consistency of a message and an idea. Often this is a long process, and often what really helps that process is that constant drumbeat of that message. And it's so funny because I was on your website where you have all the forums at which you've spoken. There are so many. I was very overwhelmed initially seeing that. I was like, I kind of question, doesn't that get exhausting? But in a way, we need to hear it, and we need to hear it over and over. And I'm curious, you bring people into spaces and often some things might repeat, but I'm curious how you've seen that consistent nature of it affect people and their openness to transformation.
Such a good question. I'm really torn on this one. So on the one hand, if I think about me being in service of an idea or really of changing things, then I would wholeheartedly say, yes, consistency is key and that drumbeat is key. And I should really not be so worried about maybe my own boredom with putting on the same record again and again, because it does take a while to sink in. And there is something to be said about the deep satisfaction that comes with honing and perfecting something. It's like if you ever performed on a stage, whether you're an actor or a musician, it is so satisfying if you give a talk for the 50th time and it's never the same, but it gets better and better. It's quite beautiful and it's a craft. But at the same time, I mean, the other doubt that I have is I remember reading Anant Giridharadas, a writer who spoke at the House of Beautiful book, Winners Take All. And he was distinguishing between thought leader and critic. And he made this distinction that thought leaders are basically paid by organizations to essentially tell them what they want to hear. Whereas a critic is someone who actually really criticizes the system and actually has the courage in front of a corporate audience to address things that are rather uncomfortable. You know, reflecting on my own work and my own speaking, I'm certainly much more in the thought leader camp, and I often wonder about my integrity. And sometimes you have clients saying, well, don't talk about romance, call it purpose, where I say, well, no, then I can't speak at your event. I guess in my work and also with the House of Beautiful Business, we have positions, but we're also more agnostic and in a space of opening conversations rather than criticizing.
Yeah, and I can so relate to that, because going into companies working on impact and sustainability, it's this constant fine line between being a thought leader and a critic, or I guess the other way I would call that second one is maybe a challenger, right? I found myself talking about what is sustainability and why is it important? And I think that's the tension, because you don't want to turn people off to the point where someone's like, oh, well, now you're just criticizing me and I'm just going to get defensive and not listen to what you say. And I think that's something so interesting that the House of Beautiful Business does, which is it does create that space where it is, I wouldn't say necessarily safe, it creates room for that challenge and for that exploration. And I guess does it more implicitly than explicitly sometimes.
That's really nicely said. I think you're right. Maybe it's not really always safe, but we try to create room for experiences fierce and challenging on the one hand, but at the same time, also other experiences that are more soothing or healing. And it's interesting to juxtapose them and be able to do both, even adjacent to each other, because that's what we need. We need all of it.
And that's where I'd love to connect back to your early influences about going into film, creating experiences. That is essentially with the House of Beautiful Business Events. That is what you're doing. You're taking people on a ride, on an emotional ride, on an intellectual ride. And specifically, I'd love to hear what you've learned this year about it, because so much of the beauty of the House of Beautiful Business up until now has been those in-person experiences. So much magic happens when people are in a room together. And now that's, we no longer have that. And so I'm really curious, as you worked this year to adapt it to the online space, how did that play out?
We were first heartbroken that we were able to host an in-person gathering in Lisbon as we had done in previous years. But very quickly, we realized that is a huge opportunity. Honestly, like, we were forced to do a hybrid festival, the Great Wave. But even if we hadn't been forced, we probably would have done it anyway. What was interesting, and we were baffled by this, also by the living room sessions. We hosted more than 40 online sessions starting in January this year, bringing together people virtually. And what we learned was that it is absolutely possible to create intimacy online. You know, there's so much pent-up desire for meeting in person, and there's a certain sadness that is part of any virtual conversation now, but that sadness and that desire, it's an additional dimension that you can play with, that you can tap. There are elements of the virtual experience that are very imaginative. So specifically speaking, to give you two examples, one experience that we thought was really powerful is the renaissance of audio, the audio journeys that we created. Listening together online, listening to a piece of music or listening to a voice is very, very powerful. If you omit certain senses and then you focus on one experience, then it'll get amplified by the virtual environment. Silence is another one. So we had one session where I remember that we had 100 or 150 people write collectively, each for themselves, reflections on this year. There was music and there was silence and they were writing for 30 minutes. And it was just an incredibly powerful experience because there was a deep sense of connection, perhaps even deeper than sitting with these people in the same room. We realized that despite us really appreciating, of course, all of the complexity of meeting in person, that there are a lot of nuances and dimensions of the human experience that can also take place online, and they're different. So we saw it more as an augmentation or an enrichment of the house, like the house grew bigger.
Yeah, and it's connected to the mission of so much of the work that you do to humanize business. There's something about being human right now in this year that's actually extra challenging, where so much of what makes us human has been taken away from us. And I'm curious, just for you personally, how have you stayed human?
It's really coming from a position of privilege. So I just want to sort of preface what I'll be saying by this. But at the same time, for those of us lucky enough to be healthy and have a functioning social network, I'm not sure if it's true that it was harder to be human this year. In many ways, it was easier because we were thrown back to what makes us human and the essentials of life. And I think we had to refocus and we had to appreciate the small life, not the bigger than life promises that marketing and advertising usually makes. There was a solidarity and a connection with humans all around the world who were going through similar experiences. It is almost a certain melancholy that I have where I feel like, have we squandered the opportunity? But at the same time, how can we maintain that tenderness that was also part of this experience this year?
Yeah, no, you're right. Yeah, it almost forced us to sit with ourselves, and it's not comfortable. And it's, I imagine it's the same discomfort that people feel at some of the events that you do, right? You're forcing them to confront parts of themselves that maybe they hadn't really seen. This year has been basically a giant House of Beautiful Business event, essentially, and you've just tapped into moments of it. And I do have to say, like, I want to thank you for creating that event, because there's been extra Zoom calls, but very few of those have actually managed to get us thinking and feeling and expressing those emotions in a way that is human. So I want to thank you for creating that and making that possible and holding that space for that we need, that we didn't know we needed.
Yeah, absolutely.
A big thanks to Tim. You can follow his work at timlebrecht.com, houseofbeautifulbusiness.com, and on all the social media and links in the show notes. This is Impact Journey. See you next time.